This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Lee Zacharias grew up in the Rust Belt in Michigan in a landscape dominated by factories and warehouses. She remembers visiting a beautiful place called Frankfort on Lake Michigan, and it was a trip that would stay with her for a lifetime and planted the seeds for her new novel, Across the Great Lake. Lee Zacharias is a professor emerita of English at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. She is a writer and essayist and joins us again on The State of Things. Welcome, Lee. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Frank.
It's a pleasure to have you here again. Tell us about this trip to Frankfort. Well, I guess you should talk about growing up in Michigan, right?
Well, I didn't grow up in Michigan, actually. I grew up in the Calumet region of Indiana at the bottom of Lake Michigan, and the shoreline was just lined with mills belching smoke. And on a vacation, my family stopped in Frankfort, Michigan, which is just below what is now the Sleeping Bear National Lakeshore. And it's this beautiful little town built by lumber barons, so these gorgeous Victorian houses, quaint little main street that ends in a cul-de-sac on the beach, which is just stunningly beautiful. And I thought it was the most beautiful place I had ever been in my life. There were kids, teenagers, playing volleyball on the beach. And so I imagined if I lived there, I would be one of them. Never mind that I have no eye-hand coordination. But I thought my life would be perfect because it was a small town. I would be able to walk wherever I wanted to go instead of having to ask my father for a ride. And then pretty soon, being about 12 or 13, I would be pretty, I would be popular, the boy I liked would like me back. If only I could live there. And then I never went back again for more than 40 years. I was on my way to Traverse City from my mother's house in Hammond, Indiana, to meet my husband, whose cousins were holding a small family reunion. And I realized I was about 10 minutes away from Frankfort. So I took a little detour and was just completely blown away by the fact that I had remembered it so accurately, memory being notoriously faulty as a tool.
So it looked just as gorgeous and charming as it did when you first saw it as a little girl.
It did. The only thing that was missing was the deep, evocative call of the foghorn. Frankfort billed itself as the home port of the Ann Arbor Railroad car ferries, although they actually sailed from the little industrial village across the harbor called Alberta. And at some point, the ferries had stopped running, but no one I asked seemed to know when. And so I bought a history of the railroad car ferries and was immediately plunged into this world of tricky currents and fierce storms and dangerous shoals and so much ice because these ferries ran year-round. I was just so fascinated, I couldn't let the material go. I read another and another and another.
When did the idea for this novel come to you?
I had finished the essay that I had wanted to write about what Frankfort had meant to me as a girl, and I still didn't want to let the material go, and I thought, there's got to be a novel in this. And so the first line of the novel, "We Went to the Ice," came to me, and honestly, I had no idea who was speaking, except that I knew it couldn't be a sailor because I'd had no idea what the sailor's story would be. So in the course of writing the very short first chapter, I learned it was a 5-year-old girl whose father was the captain, and he was taking her with him on his journey because he didn't know what else to do with her. Back home, her mother was dying and unable to care for her.
So she's on this voyage, a little 5-year-old girl, across Lake Michigan on this ferry with her father, the captain. But the voice of the story is also told from the perspective of the little girl grown up, right?
Oh, yes. The event, the whole journey, and particularly one thing that happens on the ship, really shapes her whole life. And she's 85 years old when she's telling the story. She has lived away from Frankfort for all of her adult life, from really about the time she was 11 years old when she was sent away to boarding school. And she's come back to Frankfurt. She's moved back there over the objection of her children. She's been recently widowed, so she's free to do what she wants. And really, she's come back home to die. That's where she wants to die.
Will you read a section for us?
Yes. My father's ship, which came to be known as the Bull of the Woods, was named the Manitou for the two islands in the fishing grounds to the north, where captains often sought shelter from high seas. It was a lake, but they called the waves seas, for it was a lake as big as a sea, and in a storm, such a lake is more treacherous than the ocean, its waves just as steep, but sharper and closer together. And of all the great lakes, my father's, the one the Ojibwe named Michigami, Great Water, is the trickiest to navigate. If you could walk its deep floor, you would have to skirt a litter of beams, timbers, and bones from all the ships it has claimed. Every child in Frankfurt knew about the 17 men who perished when the Westmoreland failed to outrun a blizzard in a northwest gale and sank in Platte Bay. Our heads were full of proper nouns. The Alpina, Andaste, Lady Elgin, Mahor, Merole, Rising Sun, Rosabelle, and Rouse Simmons.
Lee Zacharias reading from her new novel, Across the Great Lake. Going to be at Scuppernong Books in Greensboro on September 21st, Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh on the 22nd, and we've got all that at our website, stateofthings.org. Did you ever, you've lived obviously along a Great Lake, were you ever on the Great Lakes? Did you ever take a voyage?
No. My father was actually a merchant marine, first on the oceans and then during World War II on the lakes. But he never talked about it, at least to me. And he was gone 20 years before I ever began this novel, and so I wasn't unable to ask him any questions.
That's the thing about the Great Lakes. It is, they're mysterious. They're equally as mysterious as an ocean because they go beyond the horizon, so that you as far as the eye can see. So you can only imagine the menace and the danger, or perhaps the excitement, on these Great Lakes.
Exactly. And when I started reading about navigation on the Great Lakes, and particularly Lake Michigan, I was really startled to find out how very dangerous it is. In North Carolina, we all know about the graveyard of the Atlantic off the Outer Banks, but the Great Lakes are really very, very dangerous.
You know, talk about the period in which Fern is a five-year-old girl, in which much of the action takes place.
It's February of 1936. It's one of the coldest winters on record, which is why I chose that year. And also, there's no radar. It hasn't been invented yet. They have a ship-to-shore radio, but there's so much static, it's almost useless. It's during the Depression, but the ferries kind of protected that area from the worst effects of the Depression because there was plenty of work to go around working on the ferries. And so she's a child of the Depression. She was born in 1931. But as she looks back on it, she says that they really didn't know what that meant in that particular area.
How did you develop the other characters? You say it really began with, obviously the essay you wrote, but the novel itself, a sentence. And now you're going to be on a boat with lots of characters.
Lots of sailors, and I have never been around lots of sailors in my life, and I panicked when
Poor thing.
Realized I was going to have to write dialogue for these men, and I had no idea how they talked to each other. I had a former student from Wisconsin who said, oh, just have them tell Lena and Ole jokes. I had never heard a Lena and Ole joke. I had to look them up online.
Mm-hmm. And there are plenty of them.
Yes, there certainly are. Yeah. And as soon as the first sailor opened his mouth to tell one of the Lena and Ole jokes, it was as if I had been listening to these sailors talk
really?
To me my whole life. Everything else came to me. My husband, who has been a Tigers fan all of his life, said, well, of course they're going to be talking about baseball, because in 1935, the Tigers won the World Series.
Uh-huh.
And so it all just sort of became very organic, I guess would be the
Lena
best way
and
to put
Oli
it.
Jokes are a form of, let us say, dumb blonde jokes. They're you know, they end up sillier and sillier as the joke goes on. They have a kind of an ethnic gloss, I would say, Scandinavian,
yes.
But they've been applied to every ethnicity, and they all have different names in different communities. So that interesting that it would do that. Did it trigger content for you, or simply the dialogue and the rhythm of the language?
It triggered the rhythm of the language, the voices that the various men would have, and just the way they would relate to one another. All just grew out of looking up these jokes online.
So there was some fun involved. And a ghost. There's a ghost in this book.
There is a ghost.
You have a small section you can read, but a bigger story to tell.
Yes.
So maybe I'll ask you to read that for us and set it up
okay.
for us.
This is actually a whole chapter itself. There are a lot of very short chapters in the book. And this comes very early in the book. There was a ghost on my father's ship, but I can't tell that story yet, because ghosts take their time. They keep their secrets. A ghost never comes at you straight away.
From the novel Across the Great Lake, Lee Zacharias is going to be giving some readings, Scuppernong in Greensboro on the 21st of September, Quail Ridge Books on the 22nd. Our website, stateofthings.org, has all the information. You encountered a ghost.
I did, at the Island Inn on Ocracoke. This ghost did to me exactly what the ghost in the novel does. She just came and she grabbed my foot and held on to my foot all night. And I wasn't terrified, but it wasn't a very restful night.
It's hard to sleep with a ghost holding onto your foot,
exactly.
Isn't it? That's what I found.
Exactly. But I would have thought I had imagined it, because I had always been very suspicious of the paranormal, never having had an experience like that before. But when I walked down the stairs to the lobby the next morning, the desk clerk took one look at my face and said, "Would you like to change rooms?" And I knew, I mean, that just confirmed the fact that I had not imagined this. And then as I was starting to research this novel, one of the things I did several times was to tour the only remaining railroad car ferry. They were all after they were taken out of service in 1982 when the railroads went broke. They were all cut down for barges or sold for scrap. And this one was preserved, and it's in Manistee, Michigan, about 30 miles south of Frankfort. And I toured this car ferry a number of times, and the guide pointed out in the steward's cabin, in the walnut paneling, a place where people saw the face of a ghost. And I took pictures, and I have to confess I cannot make out the face of the ghost. But sailors are a very superstitious lot. It's true that a lot of Great Lakes ships carried a horseshoe that was nailed to the wall with the prongs pointing up, because the lakes themselves form a kind of horseshoe, but the prongs are pointing down, and that's where all the luck runs out. So as a good luck token, they carried this horseshoe. And I started reading ghost legends about the Great Lakes. Frederick Stonehouse has a couple of books, Haunted Lake Michigan, Haunted Great Lakes, and discovered that North Carolina's Outer Banks have no monopoly on ghost stories. I knew I wanted a ghost, but I didn't know who the ghost was until I was maybe 25 drafts into the novel.
Well, ghosts are really another theme. I mean, you have a ghost in the story, but in a sense, there's a deeper theme here, and you talked about it earlier, and that is the notorious unreliability of memory, which in itself is a kind of a ghost and creates these ghost images. And you have the 85-year-old Fern telling the story, and we've got two voices going back and forth. Talk about those two, the resonance of those two voices heard throughout your novel.
Well, she tries very hard to recreate the voice and the mentality of the five-year-old as she relives this journey. At one point, she says that people often say the past comes back to them as if it were yesterday, but that journey doesn't come back to me as if it were yesterday. It comes back to me as if it were today. And so I tried as much as possible to use the voice of the five-year-old in the chapters that are actually set on the boat or that are set in her childhood. And then there are more reflective chapters because she's haunted by what happens on this journey.
To find out more, you would have to read The Journey and the book Across the Great Lakes, written by my guest, Lee Zacharias. Lee, thank you so much for being on our program.
Thank you so much for having me.
Lee is a professor. Lee Zacharias is a professor emerita of English at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. She's an author of a number of books. Her latest is Across the Great Lakes. She's going to be at Scuppernong Books in Greensboro on September 21st, Quail Ridge Books in Raleigh on the 22nd, and Bookmarks Bookstore in Winston-Salem on September 23rd. If you missed it, check out our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director, with Al Wadarski helping out today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stacio, and here's some more music from the Titus Gant Quartet, who's performing Sunday Jazz Picnics at LaBauer Park on September 30th. Titus Gant.